The Guardian.
Southern Malawi and Zimbabwe are both experiencing what some are calling the worst drought in 35 years.
I've received two messages in two villages, where kids were left at home, where the mother went to look for food. They ended up eating some plants and they died. They died because they ate something. They ate that something because there was no food. I'm just reporting as it is, to the extent of the hunger. It's a disaster.
That's the voice of Juliana Lunguzi from the MCP, the Malawi Congress Opposition Party, and Member of Parliament for Desda East, speaking about the food shortages in the country. Usually South Africa produces enough grain to export, so that when other countries are lacking, they can depend on surpluses from there. This year, however, even South Africa has had to import maize, and the effect on surrounding countries has been palpable.
My name is Beatrice Mwangi. I am the Regional Resilience and Livelihoods Director for the Southern African region. For some countries, this is successive seasons of crop failure, which means that communities have much less, and more vulnerable communities being made even more vulnerable. So the need is dire.
Given that local climate impacts of El Niño, the seasonal weather phenomenon, are relatively predictable, why are we here again with communities who are really struggling due to failed harvests? My name is Lucy Lamble, and for this month's podcast, I start my journey near the River Shire in southern Malawi. Here I am now in Neno District, talking to 36-year-old Annie Namakwa. She's a mother of four, and her home is in an area which was particularly badly flooded last year. Now, due to the late rains, the community is surrounded by wilting crops all around her homestead.
I was born in this community, and I've grown up right here. We used to have very good harvests. The rainfall pattern has been getting different over the years, and our output has been far much worse. You know, this has a very big bearing on our children, because where there's no food, raising them becomes very hard, and providing for them is also very much difficult. You see, in the past, I would even harvest groundnuts. I would also even do some soy. Now, what it meant was that in the morning my kids would have porridge, and then off they went to school happy on a full stomach. Farming this year has been very hard. It's been very difficult. We planted the first maize. It all wilted off, and we had to replant. And what you see in the garden right now is our second planting. But then there is nothing, as you can see. I go into other people's gardens, but most of the times I have to go into the forest and find firewood, which I sell to people. And it is through this that I'm finding food for my children.
Immaculate Bottoman, the senior area program manager in Neno District for World Vision, explains how the area has been affected.
We've had dry spells that have affected the crops in the field. Currently, according to information from government, about 7,000 hectares of land have been affected. The crops have wilted, others stiffing. It means that the community are going to harvest very little food this year. We are anticipating almost a 10% reduction of food production in this area.
Throughout the region, droughts are now happening with increasing regularity. Beatrice Mwanga is Resilience and Livelihoods Director for the Southern Africa region, World Vision.
It was one big drought every 10 years, then it came to one drought every 5 years. And now the trends are showing that it will be one every 3 to 5 years. So we are in a crisis, all right, that is true. But it's going to be the new norm. So our responses need to highlight that. Our responses need to appreciate there is climate change, and it's going to affect the people that we work with, the communities we serve. So our responses also need to focus on the short term, the medium term, but the long term as well.
So how has this situation come about? Opposition MP Juliana Lunguzi from the MCP.
If you ask, you know, you see it in government documents and everything, they will tell you, oh, we are facing this because we have El Nino, because climate change and everything. In every statement that we had, we knew that we were going to have an El Nino in Malawi. I'm thinking, okay, what you're telling me, it's exactly what you told me last year. You're supposed to prepare. But when you look on what we have done as a country, you'll see that mainly we are facing these problems because of our lack, I would say, proper investment in the agriculture sector and also accountability, especially in the utilization of the various loans that we have taken. And because of laxity within the system.
In fact, there is maize for sale in the market, but it's not affordable for all. The Agriculture Development and Marketing Corporation, or ADMARC, is a government-subsidised organisation. Partially commercialised, it aims to generate profit as well as provide food for the most vulnerable, a difficult balance to achieve. In urban areas such as Blantyre, Malawi's second city, a month's supply of maize may cost the entire household budget. Others who aren't formally employed may only be able to buy small quantities of food at a time and then have to hold out until ADMARC has supplies available again. Noel Chalamanda is the mayor of Blantyre.
We work with the local leadership in the local areas to identify people that need the help most. The chances of people in the city not from dying from hunger are much better than in the rural areas because the options are much more than in the rural areas. But the question again at the end of the day is, can they afford it?
ADMARC has not had constant supplies. Communities in rural Neno describe long queues of women standing in line for 2 days before being sent away with no maize. Meanwhile, farmers are struggling to irrigate their crops. A few lucky ones have land near rivers or the lake, but many cannot access water. World Vision has established a system of lead farmers for key communities in the district.
I'm Edwin Jimaimba. I'm a lead farmer of this Krombizo section.
I am someone who is well conversant with new farming technologies. I know how to apply fertilizer. I know when to prepare my garden in time for rains. And most of the times, my family is food secure. For the past couple of years, World Vision has been supporting me as a lead farmer and my farmers with farm input seeds and sometimes fertilizers. At a time like this, we go close to the river where we do irrigation. But then, now, it's not everyone in the village who has space close to the river that they can be producing maize. What we are now thinking of is how best we can transfer that water right into the village where everyone can have access to that. Because now with the inputs that were supported by World Vision, they can't be accessed by everyone because they can't afford giving everyone. But then this year, we're saying almost everyone will be hungry. So we are faced by this situation where we are thinking of where to find resources for those other farmers.
In some districts, advisors are trying to support farmers to make the shift to growing small grains, which are more drought tolerant, and move away from maize. However, culture and tradition can be barriers to this. Tabani Mapoza is partnership leader for food assistance within World Vision.
It would help if they adopted small grains that are drought tolerant and some of those are crops that would work better for their environment. But we are not seeing that adoption happening as fast as we would like to see it. Where culturally the white maize is what has traditionally been a staple crop. And when you are changing things that are that ingrained to a society, it does take time. In some communities, sorghum was always associated with being a crop for the poor. And so many people are struggling with accepting that they may be poor. But that is not the case. It shouldn't be about whether they should be accepting whether they are poor or not, but they should be accepting what is viable within their context and within their communities. And that's a work that will take a while.
And of course, the involvement of farmers and the communities themselves is key to finding solutions. Fortson Kafweku is the Deputy National Director, World Vision Malawi.
Everywhere where we have a river, we should be able to do irrigation. I was very pleasantly surprised when I went to one of the programs just near here, near Lilongwe. I found one farmer who was using what he was calling wasted water from a borehole. And this water, when the women are pumping and getting the water to the children, some of that runoff, what he has done is he dug a pit and that water goes into, and he pumps it in a tree and he uses gravity. And one by one, he's actually irrigating his crops. It was amazing. I think that man has got something like half a hectare of maize being produced with that kind of water. So that's what we're trying to let people know, that it's not about wanting to have so much water, but how we are going to use it. Because that's a simple principle of drip irrigation.
Meanwhile, vulnerable households continue to face critical shortages. Juliana Lunguzi again.
Because what is happening now, I went through the village, it was a school day. You find girls who are just sitting without going to school. So you're asking, why are you not going to school? We are too hungry. Parents are taking these kids to go and queue at the ADMAC depot while they are trying to do other things.
I'm here now with Rose Norman, a 60-year-old widow, who clearly takes great pride in how she maintains her compound. She's the only breadwinner in a household of five children.
When I wake up in the morning, since I don't have enough food to eat, I rush and do piecework. With the little money that I get, I send the children to go and buy flour on the market, and then we make some food for them. The local bread, that's what we make and share with the children to eat. When there's no food at home, women are not free. They're not happy because they're always thinking about their family, just like I am thinking about my children.
As the situation deteriorates, many families are simply focusing on finding food to feed themselves and their children each day. But when other basic needs are pushed off the priority list, this can have a knock-on effect. Immaculate Bottom Man again.
Instead of the community focusing on the development interventions that we do with them, they now focus on finding food for the next day. And usually, education is also affected in that children, instead of going to school, they are left at home to go and look for food and support their families as well.
Nearby, I come across Mary Gangisa. She's 17 and expecting her first child and has had to drop out of school. She's not yet had any antenatal advice and is clearly still coming to terms with her situation.
I destroyed my future because I stopped going to school. Right now, we just managed to buy maybe one packet of maize, that's 5 kgs, and we just eat for a few days and then the food is finished. So I have lacked in notebooks and or other things which are needed for my school.
Virginia Kachigunda is Deputy Director for School Health and Nutrition, the part of the Education Ministry that deals with emergencies.
It's true. Girls are the most affected when it comes to emergencies. Not only emergencies, even culturally in Malawi, we are deliberately focusing on girl child education because the girls are at a disadvantage. And when problems like a drought occur, it is the girl child which is pulled out from school. Not willingly, but the demands to care are placed on the shoulders of the girl child. She has to go out, look for food, and some of these girls are engaged in transactional sex. When girls drop out from school, maybe they are pregnant because of the circumstances that they are in, the government is receiving them back after delivery. So this is a deliberate action that the government has done to make sure that we can bring back the girls who missed the way, and then they can do well. I'm one of such kind of girls. I had my baby when I was in Form 1, and I went back to school. Now I'm a deputy director here.
Juliana Lunguzi also agrees that for girls, getting an education is crucial.
I mean, without education, that's it for you. So you're just recycling the poverty at household level. We are recycling our poverty because if somebody drops out of school, what do you do with a 10-year-old at home? Eventually, they'll get married. So these are the early marriages that we want. And you're looking at all the maternal complications that you have, be it fistula or even obstructed labor, to these girls. And these have long-term psychological effects. Yeah.
the southern part of Malawi is badly, badly hit. Swaziland, as I mentioned, Lesotho, the number of heads of cows, the cattle that is dead in those countries is a bit high. Zimbabwe as well, 22,000 cows lost at this point, and the number is growing.
That's Beatrice Mwangi again. She works on resilience and livelihoods for the Southern Africa region. I've now reached Masvingo province, a particularly dry area in the south of Zimbabwe, where the effect of the drought extends well beyond dying livestock and the failed harvest. Even communities that normally irrigate here describe how they're faced with silted up dams. Bernard Hadzirabwi is the district administrator for Chivi district. He explains the impact of the drought on the community he serves.
The other problem the district is facing is a shortage of potable water. We have very little of surface water. So basically people for domestic use and their livestock rely on bore water. But now facing the situation whereby they have to buy food. So now it's now very difficult for them to buy food plus livestock feed. So which is the livestock is the one of the basic means of surviving for the people here. Now the livestock is dying.
And children are particularly badly affected.
So after a child having received 1 meal a day to come to school and learn properly, it's very difficult. Also, the issue, those who are living close to some big townships, you find some young girls involved in bad practices like prostitution, which will otherwise lead to the sexually transmitted diseases impacting negatively again on their future, their lives.
As in Malawi, it's not just about the availability of grain, but prices that are also beyond the reach of many. To Barney Maposa again.
In Zimbabwe, I understand that the prices are between $15 to $22 a 50 kg bag of maize. For a family of five, it could probably be for a month. Food inflation has been creeping up. We have seen price increases up to 30% above normal in the recent past.
According to Fulton Kafweku, governments are only just starting to catch up with the scale of the problem in the region.
As most of the countries are actually realizing that the climate change is real, and so it doesn't take that easy to just change. Yeah, so there's a lot that needs to be changed, there are policies that need to be enacted, there are a lot of investments that need to take in place, and I think the governments in Southern Africa are really responding, they've already started responding.
So what is being done to help? This month, SADC, the Southern African Development Community, declared a regional disaster, and now governments are coordinating food imports. Chikwawa in Malawi is a particularly beautiful region, but also one that's been badly affected by flooding. At a food distribution, I meet people coming to collect their allocation of maize, cooking oil and lentils. The lentils from the US take a bit of explaining though, as they're not normal fare here. The food is badly needed and much appreciated. Everybody mucks in to help unload the lorry when it gets stuck a few hundred metres from the distribution point in the silted up soil. The World Food Programme has already extended its support for a further month due to ongoing need. They say Malawi needs a further $38 million to help those affected. One key challenge is to keep longer-term development going while also responding to the current emergency. To Barney Maposa again.
World Vision has been pushing for farmer-managed natural regeneration. We have seen it works. It is paying great dividends in countries like Niger in West Africa. But you have got to give it time. And when donors and communities don't have time and what they want is a quick fix, it can be difficult. So some of the solutions that would help us to really deal decisively with this issue are not quick fixes. You have got to have some staying power. And I think we do have a challenge of staying power, both from the community's perspective sometimes and from the donors as well.
In response to the scale of this year's emergency, some donors, like the UK, are trying new approaches alongside traditional food distributions. In Zimbabwe, they're funding a pilot program, for example, that transfers cash via mobile phones so that people can buy food in local markets.
We give people cash and they buy food, and At the moment, what we've been watching and we are trying to monitor is as this drought deepens and goes further on, how are the markets going to respond? Because for us, that's the tricky piece. At which point do we need to be working with food in kind because the inflation is overtaking us? Or at which point do we need to still stick with the cash?
While communities are facing up to the need to move away from their overdependence on rain-fed farming, in the short term, the daily struggle faced by millions of families to find food just to survive the day continues.
In the past, if things were bad for you, you know you'd turn to your neighbor and they would give you a hand. But now even that neighbor is also hungry. Now we are all facing the same challenge.
We'll continue hearing these stories of people dying, people getting sick. And if you go to the hospital, you're looking at increased malnourished children.
That's the situation that, as you can see, that there is no maize in the fields, so we are not expecting to get anything. So, yeah, that would be the situation. I want to be having food for myself to feed the baby.
That's all for this month's Global Development Podcast. You can hear all of our podcasts on theguardian.com/global-development or on iTunes, SoundCloud and all podcasting apps. Thank you for listening. My name is Lucy Lamble and the producer is Carrie Stewart. We return as usual next month.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.